Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Kuf Chav Hei Amud Bet, by the two dots. Gemara here is going to discuss the latter half of the Mishnah, which is Pekaka Chalon. In Pekaka Chalon, we saw a machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer says the only way that you can put in the window, the shutter of the window, is if it's kashur vitalui. It's both tied and hanging. Because Rabbi Eliezer is choshesh for what we call Mechzeg and Mosif al Oelorai. You're adding on to something. You're adding something to the building. And it looks like you're building on Shabbat. So how do we prevent that? We have the shutter be tied and hanging. So you're not taking a piece of wood from the building materials. You're not taking something that looks like you're bringing from the outside and putting it to the window. But it's something that's always present. Something that hangs. Something that is right near the window. So it's obvious that you're putting back the shutter and not adding to the building. That's the position of Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, the Chachamim say, Ben kach u ben kach pokikim bo. Whether this or that, you can close it. Question is, what is the position of the Chachamim, which is what we're about to discuss. Just as a little bit background, because it's going to come up a lot today, there are three categories that we have to keep in mind here. There's what we call kashur vitalui, being tied and hanging. There's a second category called kashur vilotalui. It's tied, but it's laying on the ground or touching the ground. And there's a third category called murach, which means enu kashur ve'enu talui. Those are the three categories, and they're going to come up a number of times in the positions that we're going to see. Well, kashur means it's tied to the building, and talui means it's hanging, it's not touching the ground. All right, chamim amim, the second to last line on kuf chav hei amud bed. Chamim amim, ben kach u ben kach pokakim bo. My ben kach u ben kach. What is it meant by ben kach u ben kach of the chachamim? So I'm Rabbi Abba, I'm Rav Kana. Ben kashur, ben she'enu kashur, vehu shemitukan. It doesn't matter if it's tied or not tied, as long as it's mitukan. Now mitukan, as Rashi says, is mukhan mi'etmo lekach. That it's not a problem of mukse, you're miyached the object. And therefore, it doesn't have a din of Isur Tiltul. As Tosafot notes, Rabbeinu Tam says, when we say here that it's mitukan, we mean not being through a maise, but simply b'machshava. You have in mind to use it, that's enough to make it mukhan. So what Rabbi Ava Bar Kahana says is that the Chachamim believe that even if it's not tied and it's not hanging, you can still use it. As long as it's not an object of muksa, then you can use it to close up the window. So they're at the opposite extreme from Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is going to require both tied and hanging. And the Chachamim are going to require neither. So I'm really Rabbi Yirmiya. Rabbi Yirmiya says, why did you jump to that extreme? Why don't you say this? V'leim amar, ben talui, ben she'ena talui, v'hu shekashur. Why don't you put the Chachamim's position in that middle category where it's tied? It just doesn't matter if it's hanging or if it's on the ground. The Chachamim would agree with Rabbi Eliezer, you need it to be tied. But they will disagree on the fact that ben kach u ben kach will mean ben talui, ben she'enu talui, which means whether it's hanging or not hanging, then it will be mutar to use it. But they will agree that if it's munach, if it's not tied and not hanging, that you could not use. So that's Rabbi Yirmiya's question that he poses to Rabbi Abba's explanation of the Chachamim, and then he brings a proof to his position. The Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, k'machloket kan, kach machloket ben nagar hanigrar. The machloket that we have here in Pekaka Chalon is mirrored in a machloket that we find in the Mishnah of Nagar HaNigrar. Now, a Nagar is a bolt that we've actually bumped into before, the Nagar, but there are two opinions as to exactly what a Nagar is. One opinion is that a Nagar is a bolt at the base of the door. It's a pin that you would press down on that would bolt the door by pushing that pin down into the ground, and that's how it locks. That's one opinion about what a nagar is. The other opinion of what a nagar is that it's a cross beam. It's a locking mechanism that works by barricading the door. So one of those two, both of them are long pins. Question is it a pin that goes into the ground to make the bolting, or is it a pin that goes across the door to stop the door from being opened? That's nagar. Hanigrar means that it's dragged on the ground. So that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a nagar hanigrar. It's on the ground somehow. So in that, machloket, we have noalim boba migdash. One is allowed to use such locking mechanism in the migdash, avalo b'midina, but not outside of the migdash. V'amunach, if it's not attached at all, kan vikan asur. In both places it is asur. Now just in terms of the migdash, we know that there's a principle, ein shvut b'migdash, that we don't generally have yisurei d'rabbanan that apply in the migdash. Tosafot, back on Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Bet, mentions that this is not an absolute rule. There are certain times when there are shvutim b'migdash, and so it's not absolute, but it's a general principle that has exceptions. And that's what he noted back then on Kufchav Gimel Amud Bet, that that was one of the exceptions. Here, it's not one of the exceptions, and here, ain't shvut b'migdash means that if it's an Isur d'Rabbanan, we would waive it in the migdash. So what the Tanna Kamma here says is that this type of locking mechanism cannot be used outside of the migdash because there's an Isur d'Rabbanan, but it may be used in the migdash because we waive the Isur d'Rabbanan. But munach, if it's laying on the ground, kan v'kan asur. It's asur in both places. I'll come back and explain this in 1 second. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, hamunach. If it's lying on the ground, then b'migdash, then you can use it in the migdash. Panigrar, if it's dragged on the ground, then even b'midina, you can use it even outside of the migdash. And now we have a braita that helps us to understand what this nigrar is. So far all we explained was nagar, which is the bolt. And then we said nigrar means dragging on the ground. What does it mean that it's dragging on the ground? So now we have a braita that helps us to understand what is meant by nagar nigrar in the Mishnah, which is ezu nagar hanigrar. What is called a lock or a bolt that's dragging on the ground? Shnu'alim bo migdash avalo b'midina, that you're allowed to use in the migdash and not outside the migdash. Kol shikashur vitalui. It's tied, it's hanging, but there's a little exception to that. Rosho magia la'aretz. But its head reaches the ground. Rashi claims that rosho magia la'aretz means that one end of it is on the ground. Like over here, in this picture, you can see that it's tied, it's hanging, but one end of it is touching the ground. That's the way Rashi learns. On the other hand, Tosafot over here brings from the Rashba, and there are others that believe that Rosho Magia La'aretz means literally that it's laying on the ground. It's tied, it's hanging, but it lays completely on the ground. So those are the two possibilities. Now, this would be the middle category of what we spoke about before. Before we spoke about three categories. Kashur v'talui, kashur v'eino talui, and then munach. So this category, that would be that middle category, which is kashur v'eino talui. Even though the Braita describes it as talui, it's not really talui because we know Rosho Magia La'aretz. So according to Rashi, that means one end is on the ground, according to others means both ends on the ground. So it's a case of really kashur v'eino talui that we've seen until now. In that instance, the Tanna Kamma says that is mutar b'migdash, but asur b'midina. That means that there's an isur d'rabanan that applies to that in the medina, outside of the migdash. That isur d'rabanan is waived when you are inside the migdash. Then along comes Rabbi Yehuda, we saw before in the Mishnah, now in the Braita, and explains, ze af b'midina mutar. That, even in the medina, is mutar. Ela ezehu sh'midina asur. What is asur b'midina? Kosheinu lo kashur. Vilo talui. That is something that's not tied and not hanging. That means it's munach. Bishamto menicho b'keren zavit. You take it out and you place it down. Here, it's a free-floating bolt. Just a free-floating bolt that has no string on it. And you put it into the ground and you take it out. That's munach. That outside of the mikdash would be asur. But in the mikdash would be mutar because you'd wave the isur dirabanan. So now, if you have this, and we put these two together, we take the Mishnah of Nagar Nigrar and our Mishnah of Hakakach alone, and we line up the Shittot. What do we see? From Rabbi Shimon Baba Mishmedula Mantana Nagar Nigrar. Who is the Tanna Kamma here in Nagar Nigrar? Rabbi Eliezer. It's Rabbi Eliezer who is Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah of Hakakach alone. So there are a couple of things to note. First of all, what is the problem here with Nagar Nigrar? What Isur are you in violation of? So we knew by Pokakim that Rabbi Eliezer was Hoshish for Mefsek Binyan. It looks like that you're building when you add it on. When you place the lock in, what Isur d'Rabbanan are you in violation of? So this happens to be a big machloket. Rashi over here says, in the case where it's munach, in the case where it's not attached at all, the Tanna Kamma says that that's both asur b'migdash and b'midina. Why is it asur b'migdash and medina? Rashi claims it's asur in both places because it's binyan gomor, binyan d'oraita. When you take that peg and you put it into the bolt, and you leave it there, that's binyan d'oraita, and that's why it's asur in the mikdash. We're waving isurei d'rabanan. So it must be in a case of munach that the Tanna Kamma believes that you're now in violation of an isur d'oraita of binyan. That's what Rashi claims. Rabbeinu Tam says that he doesn't think that's right. Says, how can you call that binyan d'oraita? Says, maybe Rashi means because you're mevatel it in the spot, you're not planning on taking it out again, it looks like binyan. But there are two requirements to be in violation of binyan. One is koshu, you have to do some sort of tikkun. And number two is it has to be permanent, something that you're going to leave there, an action that has duration to it. Over here, you're right. You did something by putting the bolt there to hold the door. But that's not a permanent action. You could take it out again. You can put it back in. That's not called binyan. And so Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like the definition of binyan. And he says that the whole issue by Nagara Gagara is simply mukso. It's a problem of tiltul, mukso. He says, what about Bekaka Chalon? He says that Bekaka Chalon has both issues. Bekaka Chalon, Rabbi Lezer has two issues. He has one issue, which is mechsek binyan. And number two is that there's mukso. So those arguing about both issues, the Chachamim ignore both. The Chachamim say it's not mukso, and it's not mechsek. And they argue on both issues. Nagar and Gagar is only bringing one of those two issues. That's the problem of Muksa. And they're comparing Nagar and Gagar to our Mishnah in the context of Muksa, which is it Asur B'Tiltul or not Asur B'Tiltul? So that's the way the Rabbeinu Tam learns the machloket here between the Tanakama and the Rabbi Yehuda. So now, if we lay out their shitot, the Tanakama here says, if it's Munach, if it's left on the ground, Asur, you may not use it, not in the Midina, not in the Mikdash. Rashi claims because it's an Isur D'Oraita of Binyan. Tosafot claims that it's a problem of mukse. It's the usher because it's tilta. It's not considered to be mukhan in order to use it as a bolt because you didn't do any preparatory actions for it. Then the Tanakhama says, if it's kashur, ve'ena talui, it's tied, and it's not hanging, because Roshom magi alaretz. So in that case, that's the middle scenario. Tanakhama says, asur b'midina, that's still asur outside of the Mikdash because we have an Isur Derabanan. But in the Mikdash, that is mutar because we waive the shvut. In the case where it's kashur v'talui, he says mutar in the Mikdash, mutar in the Medina. So if you look at the Tanakhama, he basically sets up exactly like Rabbi Eliezer by Bekaka Chalon. They have identical shitot, which is that when it's tied and hanging, mutar. Tied, not hanging, asur. On the ground, asur. That makes them identical. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, believes that where is it that you have an Isur Derabanan that's waved in the Mikdash? That's by munach. When it's laying on the ground. When it's laying on the ground, then in the Mikdash it's mutar to use. In the Medina, it's asur to use. But if it's kashur ve'eno taloi, or kashur v'taloi, in both those instances he would say mutar. He would say that's fine to use, both in Medina and Mikdash. So based on that, Rabbi Yehuda would parallel the shita of the Chachamim. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda parallels the shita of the Chachamim, what do we see about the shita of the Chachamim now? He says, kashur v'taloi, mutar. Kashur ve'eno taloi, mutar. Munach, asur. So that is like Rabbi Yirmiya just said. That where do the Chachamim say that it's mutar? Only when it's kashur, ve'eino talui. They do not say it's mutar when it's totally detached. The only thing we say that it's mutar when it's totally detached is in the Mikdash, because they waved the Isur Derabanan. But outside of the Mikdash, that would be asur. And that's Rabbi Yirmiya's proof that when the Chachamim say ben kach in our Mishnah, they mean kashur, and the ben kach means whether it's talui or eino talui. But a minimum has to be kashur. And that's why Rabbi Yirmiya brings Nagar Nigra as a proof to the fact that the Chachamim in our Mishnah believe that it has to be a minimum kashur. So what does Rabbi Ava Bar Kahana say to that? He says, Ana, damri ki hai tana. I hold like this tana. You know, we have another machloket tanaim. And in this machloket tanaim, there we see the sheet of the Chachamim paralleling what Rabbi Ava Amar Rav Kahana says. And that is, the tanya, we have a tosefta. Kane shitkinu balabait yot poteach minu elbo. He has a stick or a staff, some sort of peg that he now prepares to use to be opening and closing. Again, the word hitkinu over here means he's mino. He prepared it. He prepared it again simply through Makshava. We'll see that in the upcoming Gemara, that it was done through Makshava. So as long as it's not considered muksa because you had in mind to use it, then you can use it. When is that true? Bizman shekashur v'taloi. If it's kashur v'taloi b'petach, if it's tied and hanging on the door, puteach v'no elbow, then you can use it. Ain kashur v'taloi, if it doesn't have either of those, ain no poteach v'no elbow. Once again, the Tanakhama here sounds like the Tanakhama from Nagar Nigrar. Sounds like Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, which is in order to be mutar, you need kashur v'taloi. You need to be tied and hanging. Anything besides that, asur to use. That means even kashur v'ain taloi or monach, both of those will be asur to use. We have someone who argues on him, who is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer mitukan af al pi she'eino kashur. All it has to be is prepared. You have to have makshava that you're going to use it, even if it's not tied. So now we have the other opinion, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says kashur v'taloi mutar, kashur v'eino taloi mutar, enu kashur enu taloi mutar. He says it's mutar across the board. So again here, if you have a Tanakama who sounds like the Tanakama of Nagari Nugra, who sounds like Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah, and then we have someone who argues on that Tanakama, who is the one who argues on the Tanakama parallel to the Chachamim in our Mishnah? And here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if he's parallel to the Chachamim in our Mishnah, you see, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel does not require Kashur. He says Munach, even if it's laying on the ground, that is mutar. And that's similar to what Rabbi Abba Bar of Gano said. But the position of the Chachamim is Ben Kashur. Benu an Kashur, mutar. So what you have here is, you have two Amoraim trying to explain the position of the Chachamim in our Mishnah, and they parallel it to other machlokot, where it seems that we have the same structure. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, based on what Rabbi Barchan and Rabbi Yochanan say, that it's parallel to Nagar Nigrar, and in that case, Rabbi Lezer is equivalent to the Tanakama, and the Chachamim are equivalent to Rabbi Yehuda. And over there you see Rabbi Yehuda has a minimum standard that has to be kashur. On the other hand, Rabbi Ava Bar Kahana says, no, I'm going to compare it to the Breita of Kaneh Sheet Kino. In that case, again, the Tanakama parallels Rabbi Eliezer, but then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel parallels the Chachamim. And there Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, doesn't have to have anything. It could be Munach on the ground, and that's considered to be fine. So that's how we get the two positions of the Chachamim. The Gemara is now going to move on to discussing Rabbi Yochanan's position with regards to this, which is Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bashilat, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha ki Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Now this is interesting from a number of standpoints. Number one, over here it says, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan was in our Gemara yesterday. Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan said, by the Nidbach Avanim, by the pile of the bricks or the stones, he requires you not only to just have a machshava, but he says you have to be mishafshef. You have to scrape them off from the tit. So we see that he requires a maaseh. Yet over here, he's saying that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who simply requires hitkinu, that you have in mind, that it's done. Tosafot, and we mentioned this yesterday, the top Tosafot on Kuf Kof Hei Amud Bet, Faz Do Tamayu asks this on Rav Asi's position. Rav Asi's position seems to be inconsistent. By the stone on top of the barrel, he says, that's considered to be a cover. You don't have to do it. As long as you had in mind to use it, that's good enough to be remove the shame muksa. By the pile of stones, you have to scrape them off. Over here, he says that paskins like Rishim Gamliel, that makshav is enough. So it seems to be an inconsistency in the position of Rav Asi. Tosafot over there wants to reconcile by seeing, basically, there are different levels of muksa. In order to remove those levels of muksa, you need a different offsetting mindset or action in order to remove the muksa, depending on how muksa it is. And therefore, there'll be different levels that Rav Asi will require in each of these situations, depending on the circumstance. That's number one. But now what we have is Rabbi Yochanan Paskin Aloha Kub Shimon Gamliel. And the Gemara says, Ami Yomer Rabbi Yochanan Achi, can Rabbi Yochanan really say that it's sufficient with makshava in order to remove the shame muksa? That's not. Don't we have a Mishnah? The Mishnah is the upcoming Mishnah that we're about to read a little later on today's daf, which is called Kisuyei HaKelim, all covers of Kelim, Sheyesh Lahem Beit Achiza, that has a handle on it, Nitalim B'Shabbat, they can be carried on Shabbat. On that Mishnah, we have a qualification by Rabbi Yochanan. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda Bashila, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Just interesting to note here that in this case, it's Amar Rabbi Yehuda Barshila, Amar Rav Asi. In the previous statement, it was Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bashilat, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Just a small change here between Shila and Shilat. That's just interesting. Amar Rav Yehuda Bashilat, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Behu, Sheish Torat Bli Alehen. That's only if they have a shame bli on them. So now we see that Rabbi Yochanan has a higher standard. It's not enough that you have in mind to use the object in order for it to remove the shame muksa. It has to be that it has a shame kli on it. So Rashi claims, what does it mean that it has to have a Torat Bli Alav? That is, that it has to have utility besides what you're trying to use it for. So here, if this kaneh, if you're trying to use it as a door bolt to open it up or close the door, it will only have a shame kli if you use it for something else. If you utilize it for something else, then it'll have a shame kli, and then you can use it as a poteach v'noel. In the case of the kisuyei kelim, if you utilize it for something besides being a cover, it has utility besides being a cover of a keli, that gives it a torat kli. Then you can use it or utilize it as the cover for the kli. But what you see clearly from this is that Rabbi Yochanan has a standard that it has to be torat kli before he removes the shame muksa. It's not enough that you have machshava on it to remove the shame muksa. So how could he paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? So note that the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rashi's definition of what it means to have a shame kli on it. He says not that you have to have an alternative usage for the item in order to make it into a Torah Kli. It's simply you have to have used it for that purpose already. It's not enough that you say, I'm going to use this for a cover. You have to have used it as a cover in order to give it a Torah Kli. So Rabbeinu Tam says, Torah Kli is not like Rashi, that you have to have some sort of outside utility besides covering or besides using it as a bolt. You have to have used it for that purpose. And then it gives it a Torah Kli alav. But nevertheless, now we have a stira in the position of Rabbi Yochanan. So now what are you going to suggest? In our case here, by the Kanesh Itkinu, that also has a Torah Kli alav. Umi, by Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Torah Kli alav. Then you would be suggesting Rabbi Shimon Gamliel requires Torah Kli, that Machshava is not enough. Atanya. We have a Braita. Again, this is the third time we've seen this Braita in the Masechta Chariot. Shell dekel, you have these palm branches gidran l'shem etzim that you cut them down to use for wood. But nimlach aleim li'yeshiva, you changed your mind and now you want to use them for sitting on. How do you change them? So the Tanakh comes and says tzarich kesher. You have to take an action. You have to bundle them. You have to tie them up. But Rabbi Shimon Omer, in tzarich l'kesher, you don't have to tie them up. You simply have a machshava on them. You want to use them for a yeshiva. That's enough. So you see, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's standard is, machshava is enough to remove the shem muksa. You don't need anything more than that. So the Gemara says, now we have a stira in Rabbi Yochanan. He's passing like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, machshava is enough. Yet he has a statement that he qualifies the upcoming Mishnah by saying that it has to have Torah Kli alav, which is a higher standard. So the Gemara says, no problem. Rabbi Yochanan, svir lei bekavate bechado, upalagalei bechado. He agrees on one point. He disagrees on the other point. He agrees that by the bolt, kaneshit kino, that you don't need it to be tied and hanging in order for it to be mutar. But he does have a standard that it has to have Torah Kli alav. So he agrees with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that you don't need kashur or taluy, but he disagrees with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and says you do need Torah Kli alav. And that's what it means. He holds like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel on the point that it could be munach and still be not muksa. But he disagrees about how it cannot be muksa. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's enough that you have a makshav on it. Rabbi Yochanan has a higher standard and says it needs Torah Kli alav. Not only just a makshav, but Torah Kli alav. Depending how you read that, according to Rashi or Tosafot. Darash Rabbi Yitzchok Nafka, Pitko Deresh Galuta, Halocha Ki Rabbi Eliezer. The Halocha is like Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah, that you require Kashur Vitaloi. Meiti Rav Amram says, well, wait a minute, but the Mishnah at the end of our Masechta. There's a Mishnah at the end of the Masechta that discusses a certain event that took place, and it concludes from that, that Midivram Lamadnu, from that which we see in the Mishnah, Shepukakim, Umodudim, Vikoshrim Shabbat, that you can plug things, you can measure things, and you can tie things on Shabbat. Now in terms of Modudim Vikoshrim, Medida is Asur Midrabanan on Shabbat, because it's Uvda Dechol. It's like doing things on a weekday, so you're not allowed to measure things on Shabbat. Kshira, we're talking about Ksharim that are Asur Midrabanan. Remember, there were three levels of types of knots you can have. There's a knot that's asur min haTorah, there's a knot that's mutar, and there's this middle grouping of knots that were asur midrabanan. It happens to be that with knots that are asur midrabanan, there's a dispensation from b'makom mitzvah, it's mutar. B'makom mitzvah, if you need to do a kesher that's asur midrabanan, that's mutar. Same thing with midida. You have to do a measurement that's b'makom mitzvah, you're allowed to do that midida on Shabbat. We waive these with the rabanan b'makom mitzvah. So if you need to measure the mikveh to make sure it's a kosher mikveh, we're going to waive that on Shabbat, because that's b'makom mitzvah, so we'll allow midida, even though it's asur midrabanan. And same thing with kshira. Over there in the Mishnah, they have to test to see whether there was a problem of tumah, so they wanted to know if it was a poteach tefach, so they had to lower something in there to put it through the hole to see. So they tied a knot around it, a knot that was also midrabanan. That's mutter again, because it's makom mitzvah. They need to know if it was tameh or not tameh. So that's allowed on Shabbat. As far as pukkim, over there they plugged a hole with a tfiach. They plugged a hole with a tfiach to prevent tumah from moving from one area to the other area, because it was a kli cheres. And the back of the kli cheres, the gava kli cheres, is not mekabel tumah. Because of that, when they plugged the hole, it prevented the tumah from moving into one area to the other area. And truthfully, this pukkim, as Tosafot points out, is not exactly like the pukkim here. Because there you put a bucket or bowl in there, you're going to take it out afterwards, versus the bolt when you put it in the ground. So it's not exactly the same. But he says, nevertheless, it's close enough. But what you see over there is pukkim. And there it's not just b'makom mitzvah. There, you're allowed to be pukkik on Shabbat, the gamrei. So we have a Mishnah later on in the Masechta, which seems to indicate that Pukakim is totally fine. So he says, tell me, why did you paskin like Rabbi Eliezer? So what's your opinion here? Why did you, Rabbi Amram, question the fact that Rabbi Yitzchak Nafko paskin like Rabbi Eliezer? Is that because you think later on in the Masechta we have a Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, and that Stam Mishnah says, Pukakim, you're allowed to be Pukak, and that's against Rabbi Eliezer? He says, well, we have another Stam Mishnah. That's Nagar and Igrar. By Nagara Gergar, the Tanakhama's position, which we said was Rabbi Eliezer's, brought down Stam. So that's a Stam Mishnah. So I have a Stam Mishnah versus a Stam Mishnah. Why do you think we should paskin any more like that Stam Mishnah at the end of our Masechta than the Stam Mishnah in Erevin of Nagara Nigrar? He says back to them, no, they're not the same. Because there's a difference between these two Stam Mishnahs. The Stam Mishnah of Nagara Nigrar and the Stam Mishnah at the end of our Masechta. At the end of our Masechta, the Stam Mishnah is not just a plain Stam Mishnah. The Stam Mishnah ends with a case. And it tells you a situation in which this halacha was actually exercised. And because of that, that's what's called Maaseh Rav. That is that they acted on the psak. Umaseh b'mei aviv shel Rabbi Tzadok u'mei aba shel ben Botnit shepakaku et ha'maor b'tzfiach v'gashu et ha'mekeida b'gemi leidam yesh b'gigit poteach tevach im lav u'medivrem lamadnu shepukim odedim koshrim b'shabbat. So that Mishnah quotes case law where they actually acted on the psak. And that's a big difference. It's one thing to have a psak halacha. It's another thing to have people who are acting on the psak halacha. If they're acting on the psak halacha, it means that they put that into motion. They put that into motion, that carries a lot more weight than simply a mishnah that states a halacha. It says, so even though we have a stam mishnah that seems to go like Rabbi Eliezer, that's Nagar Nigrar, and we have a stam mishnah at the end of the Masechta that seems to be like the Chachamim, we're going to opt for that stam mishnah at the end of the Masechta because it has maserav. It has action that was taken by Chachamim alpi that psak halacha. So that's the question of Rav Amram on that position of Rav Yitzchak Bar Nachman that he's paskening like Rabbi Eliezer. Right, this Mishnah which we just quoted before, which is Kol Kisuye Akelim or Kisuye Akelim Sheish Lem Beit Achiza Nitalim B'Shabbat. If they have a handle, they're allowed to carry them on Shabbat. Amar Rabbi Yosi B'Med Devarim Amurim. When is that true? B'Kisuye Karkaot. That's only when talking about covers for holes in the ground. You have something, a ditch or something that's dug into the ground, and now you want to cover it up. Then that requires a handle in order to deal with it on Shabbat. If you're talking about utensils, ben kach ben kach nitalim b'Shabbat. It doesn't need a handle. As long as it's a cover for that keli, that's considered to be fine to be used on Shabbat. Now we have this qualification of Rabbi Yochanan that we just saw before. Amar Rabbi Yudah Bashila, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'hu sheish terat kli alehen. That's only if they have terat kli. Again, the definition of terat kli for Rashi is that these kisuyim alalu chazul tashmish ma'alma. They have another purpose besides simply covering the kelim. Tosafot again says that's not a case. They just have to have been used as a kisui already in order to have Torah kli alehem. And once you've done that, then certain things become obvious in the Mishnah. It's obvious if these items have a Torah kli alehem and they have a beit achiza that you can utilize them on Shabbat. Then what's even the question? It's pshita that you could use those items on Shabbat as a Torah kli, as a beit achiza. Why shouldn't you be able to use that? So because of that, we're going to have to redefine what the machloket is in the Mishnah to make it something that is questionable in terms of its Torah kli. And that is, the kulei alma, kisui karkaot. When you're talking about a cover on the ground, yesh lem beit achiza in ilolo. If they have a handle on them, then yes. If they don't have a handle on them, no. Now, again, remember, this has a Torah kli alayim. They have a Torah kli, so what's the problem? When you're putting a cover on the ground, it looks like you're bonet. Looks like you're being mosif ala binyan. So if it has a handle on it, it makes it clear that this is a cover, and that's binyan. So even though it has Torah kli gets rid of the problem of muksa. How do I get rid of the problem of mechzeik binyan? I have a handle on it. If there's a handle on it, it's clear that I'm going to open and close this, and I'm not making a binyan here. If it doesn't have a handle on it, then it really looks like I'm doing bonet, because I'm going to leave, it looks like I'm going to leave the item there. On the other hand, isui kelim, by utensils, then Avgad Einlein Beit Achiza. If it has Torah Kli on it, then you have a cover for a Keli. It shouldn't matter whether it has a handle or not. What's the problem of it having a handle? It has Torah Kli, it's not Muksa. It doesn't have Muksa, you can cover the Kli with it. Whether it has a handle, doesn't have a handle, it should be irrelevant. And that's what the Gemara says now. Everybody agrees, by Kisui Kelim, you don't need a handle. So now, where is their Machloket? Their Machloket is, Ki Pliga B'Kelim D'Chabrinu Ba'aro. In a case where you submerged a Keli into the ground. So for instance, you took a garbage bin and you dug a hole and you placed the garbage bin into the hole. So now when you cover the garbage bin, it looks like you're also covering the karka. But it's really that you're covering the kli. So that's machlok of the Mishnah. The Tanakhama says that gets a status like karka. That's like a status of an item that's like a ground hole that you're covering, and therefore requires a beit achiza. Therefore it requires a handle on it. On that hand, Rabbi Yossi says that's still a keli. If it's a keli, it does not require a handle. And that's the machloket in the Mishnah, is about this case where it's in between. Case where it's a keli that's submerged into the ground. So do I classify that as a keli? That's what Rabbi Yossi says. Or do I classify it as karka? That's what the Tanakhama says. Igadamri, there's some that say that the machloket looks like this. Lishnach rina ki plige bi kisui tanur. Time at a cover of a tanur. Mar medamele de kisur karka, mar medamele de kisur kelim. Same thing, remember that the tanur, they used to plaster into the ground, they used to seal it into the ground and put layers of plaster on it, so it looks like it's mechuber the karka. It's still a keli, but it feels like karka. So then when you put a kisui, a cover on it, is that a din of karka? That's what the Tanakhama says, and therefore requires a beit achiza. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's a keli still, and therefore it doesn't require a beit achiza. It simply requires torat kli alav, and that's how you get rid of the muksa. And we begin perek mifanim. So in perek mifanim, you can clear out. Mifanim afilu arba v'chamesh kapot shel tevin v'shel tvua mipnei orachim. You'll have to clear out four or five baskets worth of straw or grain in order to make room for guests, umipnei bitul bei midrash, make room for the students to come and sit for the shiur. Avalo et ha'utzar, but not the silo. Again, the Gemara is going to come back and discuss this, exactly what this means. Mifanim. Now over here you can remove items that are not muksa. The list of items here are items that are edible to someone on Shabbat. Not to everyone, but to someone. Again, it seems obvious, the list here, that these should not be muksa on Shabbat. The Gemara later on will discuss this, which is that we're going to have a list of items here that you did in a subpar manner. You interacted with them in a subpar manner, and nevertheless, it still works, and that's why they're not muksa on Shabbat. There'll be a second list of items that you interacted with in a subpar manner, and there it doesn't work. These lists of items appear in Mishnayot, not only here, but in other Mesechtot. They repeat in many Mishnayot. The Gemara in all those cases says Pshita, and answers the same way, that it was done in a subpar way, and nevertheless it went through, or subpar way and it doesn't go through, in order to make a Chiddush out of what's said in the Mishnah. And that is, Mifanim Tshumat Teorah. You're allowed to remove Tshumat Teorah, because it's edible for the Kohanim. So therefore, you're allowed to remove it. Again, this seems obvious, of course. Truma Torah, why shouldn't you be able to interact with it? But Dmai, Dmai is something that has a safek, whether Trumot and Masrog were taken off of it. Dmai is Mutar the Aniim. There's a dispensation that Chavim give that Dmai may be eaten by the Aniim. So therefore, it's edible for someone. Maisarishon Shinitla Trumato. Maisarishon that had its Truma taken off of it. Truma that you have to take off of Maisarishon is Trumat Maser. So again, here it seems Pshita. What do you mean? Of course. You took off Trumat Maser, it's with Mutar to use. This is where the Gemara comes in and says you did it in a subpar way, and yet it's still Mutar. He took it off B'shibolim. The Levi went and jumped the gun. Before Truma Gedola was taken off from it, he went and took his Maser Rishon. So over there, he only has to take off Trumat Maser and not Truma Gedola. So it was done in a subpar way, but it's still kosher, because he's not obligated to take off Truma Gedola in that case. Maser Sheni Vegdei Sheniv Du. Talking about Maisa Sheni and Egdesh that were redeemed. Now, of course, if they're redeemed, they're chulin. Why shouldn't they be edible? Again, he does it in a subpar way, which is, he does the pijon, but he doesn't add on the chomesh. So he does it in a manner that's not proper, but it still works. Vat turmus, ayavesh, and dry lupine, pideshu machal de izim, or machal de aniim. What a different gear sold here. It's edible for goats, or it's edible for the aniim, so it's still classified as a food. Aval, what you cannot move is, lo et tevel. Again, tevel is obvious. If it's tevel, doesn't have Shabbat the Masro taken off of it, it's obvious. You can't take them off on Shabbat. And therefore, it's muksa because it's not edible on Shabbat. So Gemara will deal with what type of tevel, then a tevel derabanan. V'lo et maser rishon shelo nitla shumato. Maser rishon that doesn't have Shumat maser removed from it, that's a chiyuv mita bidei shamayim. Of course you can't interact with it. So again here, this is a case where the Levi jumped the gun, took his maser rishon before Truma Gedola was taken off, but here he took it off after Meriach HaKri. After there was a Gemara Malacha for Truma Gedola. Previous case, he took it off B'Shibalim, when they were still in the stocks, before it got to be Chayav and Truma Gedola. Here, he took it off after it was Chayav and Truma Gedola. So here, he's not only Chayav to take off Trumat Maser, but he also has to take off Truma Gedola. And that's why he did it here. He does it in a subpar way, and it doesn't work. Not redeemed. Of course, they're not redeemed. They're Kodesh. If they're Kodesh and not redeemed, then you can't use them. So here again, he did a redemption, but he did a redemption with a coin that doesn't have a tzura on it. And since it has a tzura on it, it does not work. Velo et luf, velo et chardal. Luf, Rashi says, is a type of kitniot, a type of legume. Velo et chardal, not mustard. Shimon Gamliel omer matir veluf. He was matir in the case of luf, meneshu machal orvim, because it's eaten by the ravens. Now, most people don't keep ravens, but there are rich people who do raise ravens, and they eat the luf. So therefore, it does have utilization or purpose on Shabbat. Chavile kash v'chavile etzim, you have bundles of straw, bundles of wood, v'chavile zradim, or bundles of green shoots. Imit ginan l'machal be'ima. If you intended them for feed, for animals, metal dilinotam, then you can carry them, because they're not muksa. Fim lav, That's not what you intended from them. Ein mitaltzin hamatam, because they are mukse. Now the Gemara asks the obvious question on the first part of the Mishnah, which is chashta chamesh mifanim arba mibayit. If you can take out 5 baskets worth, why do you have to tell me you can take out 4 baskets worth? Now Tosafot earlier in the Masechta pointed out that we have Mishnayot that use numbers 7, 8, 4, 5. Sometimes the Gemara asks, how come I need 4 if I already know 5? Other times the Gemara ignores it. So Tosafot gives a principle that how do you know when the Gemara is going to ask the question? If when the Mishnah says 7, 8, it means 7, 8 as an example, it means any number. 7, 8 is just an example of you can use anything. In that case, the Gemara won't ask why I said 7 and 8. The one I said 7 and 8 because 7 and 8 is just a way to say any amount. But in a case where I say literally 7, 8, and I mean 8 is literally, and that's the maximum amount you can use, then the Gemara is going to say, why mention 7 if I mentioned 8? So it turns out in our Mishnah, we're going to have 2 Amoraim explain the Mishnah, and they're going to explain it each in those 2 different ways. So in one way it will be a question, and one way it won't be a question. So the Gemara here asks, if I know 5, why do I need to have 4? Amar Rav Chisda, arba mechamesh, 4 out of 5. That means if you have 5 baskets worth of grain there, you can remove 4 of them, you have to leave the 5th one. You can't take away the 5th one, because then you're going to finish it off. When you finish it off, we're afraid of that you're going to be mishave gumot. If you take all the straw or all the tefillah out of there, then you're going to go and flatten it out, try to clear out the area, and you're going to end up flattening out the gumot, which will be a problem of binyan on Shabbat. So we know now it allows you to remove the last basket there. So if you only have 5, you can take 4 out. V'chamesh me'otzar gadol. If you have a large silo, then you take out a maximum of 5. So you can see the alternative girsa here was ikadami arba miltzer katan, 4 from a small silo, and 5 from a big silo. The idea being the same, that 5 is the maximum. 4 is the maximum when you only have 5 there, teaching you that you can't take out the last basket's worth. You always have to have at least 1 basket there. Then, what do you do with the statement in the Mishnah of Lomayo va lo et otzar? You mean not et otzar. You already explained to me, lo et otzar means you can't finish it off. So lo et otzar has to mean something else. And that means, shelo yatchil bo otzar tchila. If you have a silo that's full, you can't open it up for the first time to take grain out of there on Shabbat. Why? Because it's mukse. The silo is something that you put away for a long duration. You have it out of mind. The mekatzel lebiyadayim. So in order to bring it back into your world, you have to have already opened up the silo and used it to take it out of the world of mukse. So that's the case here. Lobo otzar means you may not start an otzar. Mani, Rabbi Yehuda. The author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, ditlei mukse, who holds a mukse, that there is a din of mukse. So that's the way that Rav Chisda explains our Mishnah. Rav Chisda explains our Mishnah that the 4 comes to tell you you may not finish off the otzar. You can't get to the bottom of the otzar because we're afraid of meshavei gumot. The 5 tells you the maximum amount of tircha you're allowed to do on Shabbat to remove these items. And lo etzar tells you you can't open up a silo for the first time. That's the way he reads our Mishnah. On the other hand, we have Shmuel. Shmuel says, Abba v'chamesh kedamre inche. 4 or 5 is like a colloquialism. 4, 5, 6, whatever you want to take out. So again, that's what Tosafot says. When you say 4 or 5 like that, we don't ask why 4 or 5, because 4 or 5 is just an expression to tell you any amount that you want. So that's exactly what he says. You can take out as much as you want. V'bayi afilu tuva nami mifanim. You can take out any amount you want. Umay avol lo et otzar. So then what is meant in the Mishnah, lo et otzar? Shelo yigmor kulo. You can't get to the bottom. You take out as much as you want, as long as you don't take out the last basket. As long as you don't take out the last amount of grain at the bottom. Because what are we afraid about? We're afraid dilati shvuye gumot. We're afraid that maybe you will, if you finish it off, you're going to be meshevet gumot at the bottom. So that's how he explains lo et otzar. Not like Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda already had not finishing off from the bottom from the 4 or 5. So therefore he explained lo et otzar, not don't start a silo. But over here, Shmuel says, 4 or 5 doesn't teach me anything about the maximum amount. 4 or 5 is just an example that you can do as much as you want. So what does it mean, lo et otzar? Don't finish it off. Don't get to the bottom of the silo, because you'd be meshevei gumot. Avala tchulei matrio. You want to start a silo on Shabbat? No problem. You want to open up for the first time, you can do that. You know why? Because mani, Rabbi Shimoni, delitle muksa. The author of our mission is Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold a muksa, doesn't have an issue of muksa. So in Ochanami, you can start a silo on Shabbat without any problem. He doesn't think there's muksa on Shabbat, so you don't have a problem starting something that is in the silo. And that's the way Rav Chisda and Shmuel explain the Mishnah. Again, just like those 2 ways that Tosafot explained before. One of them is taking 4 and 5 to be exact, that 5 is a cap. And therefore, the Gemara has the question, if 5 is a cap, then why do I need 4? Shmuel means 4 or 5 is just a colloquialism, a way to express any amount you want. However, the Gemara doesn't ask, then why 4, why 5? Because 4 or 5 just means any amount. And therefore, we don't take them exactly and ask, oh, if you have 5, why do you need 4? We ignore that completely. Okay, we'll stop over here.